next, the Archives Gay du Québec, Quebec's gay archives, launched a new exhibition earlier this month. L'émergence du village gay is a coming-out story for Montreal's gay village, a story of changing social and economic tides and the community's pushback against police violence. I spoke to curator François Bellemare about what all Montrealers can learn from those late 70s, early 80s years if they go to the archives. Take a listen.
So my name is François Bellemare. I am the commissioner for this exhibition that is taking place at Archives Gay du Québec. This organization has existed for 42 years now. It has been started at the beginning of the 1980s, and it's dedicated to collect, to archive, any material that is related to, at first, the gay community, a little bit the lesbian community, but the lesbian have their own archive center as well. And after that, everything which is related to any component of the rainbow. Through the decades, they have followed a steady growth by volunteer work, very, very little governmental money. And they became the largest LGBT archive center in the whole of the French-speaking world.
And what are we looking at today? So you have curated this exposition on the emergence of the gay village as we know it today here in Montreal. Tell us a little bit about the new show you're putting on.
Yeah. So my own connection with the archives started in a funny way. 5 years ago, I was working on writing a novel, which is a satira about the feminist discourse, the sexual orientation categories, and gender identity. And it goes, the story goes in the red light and the village in 2029. And I wanted to have accurate historical background of the area. So everybody sent me here and they opened me their doors. And since then, I kept in touch with the archives, and I noticed that there was a certain gap between generations. I would say the historical generation of the, especially the gay men, the one who pushed as young adults the coming out of the community. Most of them are now between, I would say, 70 and 85. And for decades, they worked on a very informal level of communication because it was the way that our generation functioned. The younger generation, they have a very vague understanding of what happened 40 years ago. They know it, but not accurately. So this exhibition is meant for the pioneer to revisit a chapter of their youth, for the younger to know more formally about what happened for their forecomers, for the, I would say, the many categories to remember how thin the ice can be under their feet. We believe it's all over. All the police repression, it's all over. It belongs to the 20th century. In the last 2-3 years, people start to say, well, maybe the ice under our feet, it's not that thick. So it's good to get informed.
So you mentioned a certain police repression, a climate of police raids. And you see in this exposition, you know, the late 70s, there were these major raids happening in the area where gay bars were at the time. So not the village as we know it today, but further west. Can you tell me about the role that that played in constructing the village where it is today? What's the story of that era of police violence against Montreal's gay community, and how does it impact the formation of what we know today as the gay village?
Yeah. It's sometimes a little bit difficult to understand, but when society was much more conservative, there was less police repression. Why? Because all minorities kept a very low profile. For example, 1937, the Quebec government, led by Maurice Duplessis, one of the most conservative prime ministers in our history, decided that the taverns will, from then, be forbidden for women. After 3 centuries of mixity, he created, without noticing, he created a men-only place that became a very nice ground for meeting for homosexuals. So for decades, the taverns were known informally as a place for encounters, socially / sexual / friendly altogether. And but the taverns were not bothered by the police. Why? Because they kept low profile. They never advertised themselves as gay bars. In the 60s, with the sexual revolution in society, the lesbian and the gays started to come out. So they would call themselves a lesbian bar, a gay bar. They would produce poster, gay Halloween, gays and lesbian fundraising. At that time, the police started to receive many more complaints from individuals, but from government, from business. And then the repression got harder and harder, as well as the same time that the community was stronger. So it came like in a spiral, you know, the two feeding each other in a uprising of confrontation.
Yeah, maybe tell me a little bit more about some of those confrontations, because you look at the newspaper clippings and the exposition, and I mean, some of the language is language that we wouldn't necessarily hear today, but it's also expressing a state of affairs that seems like quite a bit of tension and outright conflict and violence. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, it's it happened that in the 60s there were some episodes of police repression before Expo 67. Expo 67, it was a major point in Quebec contemporary history. I remember it as a child. It was the window that suddenly opens to the world, Quebec. And the police made some kind of cleaning before the exhibition to make sure that the tourists wouldn't be bothered. In 1976, when happened the Olympic Games of Montreal, the city of Montreal launched another series of raids against gay bars, again, to help to show a nice image of the city. So the police made several raids, and at 1977, in October, at the Trucks, which is a famous leather bar on Stanley Street, 145 to 47, men were arrested and detained all night. The next day, there was a big demonstration. It was a turning point. It will not hide anymore. We will go out in the sun, in the light, in the spotlight. We go in press conference, and their action led the National Assembly of Quebec to modify its Charter of Rights and Freedom to include sexual orientation on the list of discrimination that is unacceptable. And so the gay community, which was pretty close to the sovereignist movement for several years, claimed that Quebec this way became the first country to include that in its right of charter and freedom, because in the federal charter of rights, it was not the case. So from 1977, the militant group became more and more active. And finally, at the end of the decade, the public opinion started to shift and to say, yeah, why not change our minds? So you can see that in the Journal de Montréal, there's a combination. First, they presented you know, the police as making a good job by raiding the gay bars. And in the next page, they say, why on earth should they be so hard against homosexual?
Yeah, I read an article, I think that was from the Gazette, because it was in English, and they're talking about, also, they're quoting police officers, and one of them is saying, well, you know, there's actually some criminals who are in the gay community, like there's such and such a guy who's behind bars, and then another cop is saying, well, but the gays don't make that much trouble for the cops, they're not a violent group. So even the terms in which this sort of conflict is being talked about are very interesting, right? It's like introducing this community to a public who hasn't known really that this was all going on. They're learning for the first time. And I guess I'm curious in terms of when you were looking back and putting this together, doing your research, was there anything that surprised you about this period of history? You said that, you know, yes, you lived through the expo and everything that came after, but what did you learn putting this all together?
When I started the investigation first to write my novel. And when I got the mandate as commissioner, I got deeper in that. And I could not believe what I found. You know, in a way that sometimes the reality is beyond fiction. For example, the police heard that there was some illegal activity in the bar. Instead of going in and arrested the people that were acting illegally, they went and arrested the whole place, everybody to the central general quarters of the police. 146 men, hands to the wall, their pants down, and then they would take photographs and samples from the back in order later to prove sodomy. It's unbelievable. You wouldn't believe it happened, but it did happen in our city. I was even an adult. I was living in my own apartment. I was, you know, 20 years. But when you read that, you it's not possible. I'm reading a fiction. No, you're not reading a fiction. It's exactly what happened. And sometime when the police raided, for example, a sauna, which is also in one of the panels, they raided a sauna that was known as a meeting place for gay. And another, I would say, another trend, people that did not like so much to be in alcohol and drinking all night, it was a lot of smoke also in the bars. They liked, you know, the sauna, it's athletic, you know, the guys would go around, you know, oily bodies. It's another, but of course, it was also known as having back rooms. And so when the police raided that, beforehand, they called journalists. So the journalists and the photographs would wait at the exit. When the police came with the guys hands on their head, and they were taking a photograph and their picture shown in the newspaper next edition. So many would lose their job. They would lose their wives because many were married to women. They would go in divorce, they would lose their house, they would go in, you know. And many went to commit suicide. Many. It's much, the rate is much higher in the gay community of that time. So I read that and I said, it shall be presented to the public. It's something that should be known.
And you mentioned the movement of the village. This is the story you're telling with this exposition. For people who don't know, who haven't dug into the history of Montreal's gay village, so it used to be south of Sherbrooke around Stanley, more what we think of now as like a downtown nightlife scene around Concordia, and then the early 80s moved east to what we know of as the village now. Why did this happen? Why did this exodus towards the village happen?
It has three components. The first is the police repression. The second is the activist movement. And the two of them feeding each other. And the third one which happened in a perfect timing in history, was that at that very group of 3 or 4 years, like the Saint-Jacques neighborhood was bleeding of its middle class population, so the local business could not keep and close one after the other.
We're at a time where the gay village, I think you hear about it more in terms of social ills, for lack of a better word. You hear about increasing police presence, increasing homelessness on the street. And at the same time, over the past at least 10 years, there's been, with the growth of not just the gay, but the queer community, the plus and the LGBTQ plus, queer venues all over the city, movement away from the gay village to all different poles of Montreal. How does this period in time that you're spotlighting in this exhibition, this coming out of the gay village, how do we make sense of that in a period where it seems like the gay village is in transition once more? There's changes happening on the street. There's movement of the young people in the community. Not everyone, right? But certainly a large demographic outside of the neighborhood. You know, is there anything that you've learned doing this work that can sort of add perspective to the moment that we're living now?
Several people took the opportunity by meeting me to express their comments about two major challenges. The first one would be seen as an internal challenge, a challenge that comes from within the community or within the communities, is that the social acceptance of their sexual identity produces a situation where you can be gay or lesbian or whatever, anywhere. You can be two women in couple and raising now a family and being married, and you can buy a bungalow in Mascouche, and nobody would bother you. So why on earth do we need, to have a special ghetto neighborhood to go there to escape what? You know? So because of that social acceptance, the gay business are losing clientele. In a certain way, it's with irony that they say, well, we have to attract more heterosexual to keep our business going. You know? And this produced what I call the gospel choir syndrome. The gospel choir syndrome, it's an expression I use to say, for centuries, the gospel choir was like a refuge for the black ladies to be together, to sing their culture, to avoid any kind of feeling of being a minority, so they would enjoy that. It became more and more accepted. More and more people came to their venues. Then start one white lady to come in, a second one. And then at one point, it's so popular. We have achieved so greatly our mission that we find ourselves being a visible minority within our gospel choir. You know, it's irony that applies to that now some gay or lesbian or anybody from the rainbow say, but we go to our bar and now they have parties of heterosexual being engaged, and they come with their family, and they have all these heterosexual couples, and with the, you know, the dress that goes with it, with the makeup and all that. And which place have we dropped the ball along the field, you know? That's the internal challenge. And it could be seen as funny, and I can testify to the microphone that the journalist is smiling at that. But there's another challenge which is not very funny and will not bring any smile. It's the connection of the gay village with the close, which is very close to the neighborhood. And the neighborhood of Montreal has been for a decade a bit protected from a certain level of misery because the rents were much lower than other places in the Western world. And in the last year, it's changed completely. So everybody who is having just a small room in a studio building, whatever, if they drop one step, they come to the street. Plus the issue of mental difficulties of all kind, of people have gone through drug addiction, depression, alcohol, and all that. When these two cable that should never touch themselves, you know, the poverty, the economic poverty, and the social difficulties, when they touch together, it blows up, and then it produces very deep social problem that come to be more visible in the village. But they are not from the villages, you know. And nobody knows what to do.
And for people who want to visit the exposition, yes. Launch is Saturday. People who are going to be listening to this interview will be listening after that launch is over. But what should they know about, you know, how long it's running for and how they can plan a visit?
The exhibition runs from October 1st to December 20th. And it's open Wednesday to Saturday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock to the general public. I would say that what we call individual visits. But we also offer guided tours to groups in French, in English, bilingual, trilingual, quadrilingual, if needed.
Well, thank you so much, Francois. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
For CKUT, I'm Jules Bigel with the Local Journalism Initiative.